Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at theopenhouse.net.au blog site.
Okay, I want you to be honest with me. Do you really know your neighbours? In fact, if God moved in next door, would you notice? It's kind of a searching question, isn't it? Simon Kerry-Holt is the author of God Next Door. It won the Christian Book of the Year Award just recently. And in the book, he argues that the local neighbourhood is the natural place for faith to flourish, if we can just get up off the couch and open the front door. Well, Simon Kerry-Holt is with us. Welcome to Open House, Simon.
Thanks. It's good to be here, Sheridan.
Come inside and take a seat, so to speak.
Thank you.
Where did the idea for this book come from in the first place?
Sheridan, we were living in the great city of Los Angeles some years ago now. We had gone to pursue some postgraduate study at Fuller Seminary with an Australian theologian, Robert Banks. Mm-hmm. I had gone to explore the whole notion of spirituality and how it is connected to our everyday lives. But not long after we moved into a lovely little two-bedroom apartment in the northern aspect of Pasadena, we were sitting one Sunday night watching a Columbo rerun or something, and we heard some very distressing sounds just outside of our kitchen window. These sounds of guns being fired and a young woman screaming as she ran up the street. And I immediately said to my wife, "Call 911 as you do in the States." And I ran out into the street quite naively in retrospect, but. What I found there were two little 12-year-old boys who had been gunned down in a drive-by shooting. It was a very distressing experience, and it happens that a third little boy had crawled his way up onto a neighbour's front stoop. This happened to be a tragic mistake, a drive-by shooting where these little boys on the night of Halloween doing their trick-or-treat had been misidentified as members of a rival gang that operated in that area. The night itself was tragic, and there's so much about that that's difficult to forget, but it's what happened two nights later, quite spontaneously, just outside of our kitchen window, where a kind of a memorial had been set up, you know, the sort of thing around a light pole with photographs and flowers and candles and poetry and all sorts of things. But at about 8 o'clock at night, quite spontaneously, about 200 people from our immediate neighbourhood gathered around this light pole. It was not an organised event. There was nothing formal about it. There were no clergy present. There were no prayers prayed, no speeches made. But for about 4 or 5 hours on into the early hours of the morning, this gathering of neighbours just came to be together in the midst of this tragic situation. They came in the midst of this tragedy because they had a deep sense that they needed each other in order to understand and kind of move through the depth of the tragedy that they'd experienced together. But what was really interesting is just two blocks from where we were living was a very large, very influential evangelical church, one of these mega churches that draws in, you know, 9,000 people every weekend with their multi-car garages and their 100 full-time pastoral staff. But what struck me at that night as I met with my neighbours around that light pole, that there was not one member of that 100-strong pastoral staff, and as far as I know, there were not one of those 9,000 people who trekked in every weekend, not because they didn't care, not because this was a bad church or the pastoral staff were not deeply concerned about people's grief, but more because they didn't know. They just had no idea what had happened on their own doorstep, because the 100 pastors and the thousands of people who trekked in every weekend all lived somewhere else. And it struck me then, as it strikes me now, that if we are to take seriously this business of loving our neighbours, then we need to be home. We need to be present where we are in order to be a part of people's response to whether it's a tragedy or whether it's just the humdrum of daily life. But to be good neighbours, we've got to be neighbours. We've got to be at home.
Yes. My wife and I were just going for a walk the other night, and as we were walking down the street and around our neighbourhood, I think we've been in this unit now about a year and a half, I was thinking how I knew absolutely nobody in the street. We live in a block of units, and while we know some of the people in our block of units, we're still getting to know those people. Yeah. And then I compared it to my childhood, when there are actually times when the whole street would get together and have kind of little block parties, so to speak. And I thought that we seem to be losing that. Now, you caught a vision of that in Los Angeles, but I think in Australia we seem to be losing that local neighbourhood street-level community more than ever before.
It's interesting, isn't it, Sheridan? The evidence would suggest that it's a mixed bag. There are probably some people who are listening who could call you up right now and tell you the most wonderful stories of connection and relationship and those neighbourhood street parties and all of those sorts of things. But there would be an equal number, if not a higher number, who could also call in and talk about the neighbourhood as a very disconnected, very, very alienating, lonely place. So I really think, you know, we don't want to demonise our present experience of neighbourhood. I think there are instances where good things are happening, but it is increasingly in suburbia, I think, a much more difficult thing to connect with our neighbours, even if we want to. And really therein lies the challenge. The neighbourhood is an important place to be. How do we then begin to initiate and develop relationship in a place where, frankly, it's not always welcome?
Yes, and the irony is, of course, that we sit at home at night tapping away on our computers on Facebook and emails and taking a few mobile phones, and we actually don't know
our neighbours. It's true. The neighbourhood no longer has the playing field to itself as far as our experience of community, and we have to be honest about that. You know, we look back at even the time of Jesus, who said, you know, love God and love your neighbour as yourself. But he lived and moved in kind of agrarian villages where life was deeply enmeshed and connected around the place that you lived. That's not our reality anymore. For many people, the neighbourhood is just one place of multiple places where they experience connection and community. And so, in a sense, we have to be much more intentional in choosing to connect with neighbours.
Yes.
And that is part of the challenge for us, I think.
Yes. This is Open House right across Australia. Simon Carey-Holt is a lecturer at Melbourne's Whitley College and the author of God Next Door, this year's Christian Book of the Year Award winner. So how might we do that, Simon? How might we be a little bit more intentional, especially in this world, I guess, of gated communities and apartment blocks and McMansions in the outer suburbs?
Exactly. Well, it's about, as I said a moment ago, about being at home. And taking where we live seriously as one aspect of our lives. It's not the be-all and end-all. For many of us, we live in one neighbourhood, we work in another neighbourhood, we worship in another neighbourhood, we play volleyball on Thursday nights in a far-off place. We spend most of our time in our cars heading off to other places. So the neighbourhood, in some ways, becomes the place where we sleep and don't do much else. So in a sense, choosing to take the business of loving our neighbours as we love ourselves, it is about firstly being at home, choosing to be present. And secondly, I think being prepared to say that where I live is a really important place. I would talk in the terms of it is a sacred place. It is a God-ordained place. It is a place that is important for the welfare of the entire city. In a sense, the neighbourhood is the glue that holds the fabric together on a broader scale. So as we invest in our locality where we are, we're therefore doing something for the benefit of the entire city. So this sense of being able to say, where I live is a good place, where I live is a sacred place, and in that sense, naming it as an important part of our lives.
I think what you're saying there is really important, and I've got to be honest, I find myself more and more busy these days, and to some degree, my home is a place of refuge away from people. Isn't that a horrible thing to actually say? Got so much stuff going on that then coming home at night and that's the place, okay, here's the little, the inner sanctum, the quiet place of restoring. And I'm sure that there's a place for that.
There has to be a place for that. I think we need to acknowledge that the neighbourhood and where we live is refuge, and we as humans need refuge. We need to be able to close the door and say, this is my place of retreat and restoration and family.
And yet, if that's all it is, then it is, I think, greatly lacking. Greatly Absolutely. Lacking in that broader sense of what you're saying is this is a special place. God's placed you here in his providence, is the Christian word, and his, you know, an amazing ability to actually see over everything that's happening in the world. Yet, it just becomes this little retreat.
Sheridan, one of the really interesting things that community psychologists are saying today is that the home has to be two things to be a fully human place. This is not coming from a particularly religious perspective or a faith perspective, but simply saying for we human beings to flourish as individuals and as communities, the home has to be two things. And it has to be the very thing that you've identified. It has to be a refuge. It has to be a place where we feel safe, where we have a sense of identity and belonging. And I mean, you and I know stories of multiple people who live in very destructive, disruptive places where home is anything but refuge, and how destructive that is. So that sense that the home must be a refuge, a place where you can close the door. But community psychologists would say if that's all it is, if that's where it stops, then the home becomes a fortress and the neighbourhood becomes a place of fear and suspicion. So for the home to be a fully human place, it has to also be a place of community. The old-fashioned veranda, you know, beyond the front door, is this place where we begin to connect with what lies beyond the front fence. So a place where we begin to take seriously the relationships with those around us.
Simon Kerry-Holt is with us on Open House. Theopenhouse.net.au has the podcast. He's the author of this book, God Next Door. Simon, as a theologian, you're a lecturer at Melbourne's Whitley College, and also having a past as a chef many years ago, I believe, you've also thought of the theological aspects of food, i.e. the way that God views food and the way that, you know, food is actually much richer than simply, I guess, a source of sustenance. This actually ties in very well with what we're talking about with community and with hospitality, doesn't it?
It does indeed. And you think of all the very significant connections that you build in your life. And it's hard to think of one that does not involve at some level at least a cup of coffee, if not a lovely lunch shared at a cafe or a meal shared around a family table or the barbecue in the backyard. Food and drink are, in a sense, the lubricants that keep the cogs of relationship turning. And so even in our neighbourhoods, the sharing of food and drink and taking the plate of biscuits in when somebody arrives in the neighbourhood new to the area, or inviting the community together for what you talked about earlier, the neighbourhood party or the street party, food becomes a very important lubricant which helps us to connect and helps us make connections with people that otherwise we wouldn't connect with. Really interesting that just before Christmas last year, Sheridan, I have two children. Ali is 13 and Nathaniel is 11. And they came to me with the idea that we would make cookies for all of the people who live in our apartment building for Christmas.
Lovely.
We live on the 12th floor of an apartment building in the heart of Melbourne. So that's our neighbourhood. And so they came up with this idea that of making cookies, 130 apartments. I thought to myself, good grief, you know, this is, can't we do something a little simpler? But no, they were determined that we would do this. So we set aside a couple of days and we made hundreds of chocolate chip cookies. And my daughter went off to the $2 shop and bought bunches of cellophane. And they put together little gift cards, you know, to Happy Christmas from the kids in 1204.
Yeah.
And tied these things up with lovely ribbons and then went to every floor on the 18 floors of our apartment building and hung these little gifts on the door handles. But do you know what? From that day on, something changed in our apartment building.
I bet it did.
And all of a sudden, we had people stopping us in the elevator or stopping us in the mailroom, people sending little cards to our children, inviting them to come and pat the cat and drink glasses of milk or to meet us for coffee over the road. And that very simple act of making some chocolate chip cookies was a new beginning in the way that we were interacting with our neighbours in our neighbourhood.
I do not doubt that at all. And I sometimes wonder, in fact, I've been thinking about that as we've been talking, whether children could well be the leaders in this, helping us adults to break down the barriers and maybe even the business that actually stop us from getting to know our neighbours better.
Absolutely. And isn't it true that if you think about, you know, there are many of us at different stages of life who live our lives entirely elsewhere. You know, we come home to sleep, but we live much of our lives in other places. But the two groups for whom the neighbourhood is a really important part of their social development and their social connection is first of all young children, and secondly the elderly. Mm. Those two portions of our population whose mobility levels are significantly decreased, who rely on the neighbourhood as a very important means of connection and community. So in a sense, for their sake, we need neighbourhoods that are inclusive and welcoming and connected on some level.
Yes. So Jesus' command to love your neighbour, I guess, really takes on a real richness as we've been talking.
Absolutely. And the command, love your neighbour as yourself, has to have an immediate connection to where we are. I think from an ethical perspective and from a global perspective, have wanted to redefine the neighbour on a global scale.
Yes.
We want to be able to say that the poor people living in another part of the world, they are our neighbours and we have some responsibility and connection to them, and that is entirely right. But in so universalising the neighbour, we can forget that the person who lives next door is most immediately my neighbour.
Yes.
For our global responsibility to have any integrity, we have to know the people who live next door.
Yes.
We have to explore what it means to love them as we love ourselves.
Simon, you've left me personally with a lot to think about. I do appreciate your time on Open House tonight.
It is my pleasure, Sheridan.
Simon Kerry-Holt there. He's a lecturer at Melbourne's Whitley College and author of the latest Christian book of the year. It's called God Next Door, published through Acorn Press.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. To hear more from Open House, visit theopenhouse.net.au.